Hello, middle-aged gamers, and welcome back to our weekly podcast. In this second episode of Season 2, Phil, Adam, and Antoine will go back to their childhood and talk about their favorite arcade cabinets from the 1990s. Please leave us comments on which machine was your favorite, and don't hesitate to share this podcast or the related YouTube video, which really helps us. Thanks, and enjoy the show!
Hello, everyone out there in gaming land. This is Adam, Antoine, and Phil at Middle Aged Gaming. And we have a special treat for you. We're changing up the format a little bit in how we're going to be presenting things. But before that, make sure that you click the subscribe button and any kind of likes or bells that are available to you, because it really helps us out as it gets us more viewers and we can make more content for more people, which is something we absolutely enjoy. So with that out of the way, we are going to get into today's theme, seeing as it was Phil's idea. Phil, would you like to present it today?
Yeah, okay, why not? Seeing as it's another part of gaming, but before all of these console games where everybody kind of could have your friends over and everybody had a PlayStation or a Xbox, I'm sure those middle-age games out there can fondly remember going to an arcade, whether it's in the city centers, we had one in the city center, or the theme parks, everywhere where you go, you had those iconic, memorable, huge machines where you go into it, and everybody wants to play it. Arcade games in general, and then we decided that there was way too many, and we were looking at different lists of the best arcade games, and there was just, throughout the time, there was no way we could whittle it down to a few. So we thought for today's episode, seeing as it's part of the prime time of most of our gaming lives of going to arcades, we would focus on iconic games through the 90s, especially towards the tail end of the 90s, I imagine, with you two gents. So these are a list of a few of our favorite arcade games from the 90s, and then we're going to try and list them in personal preference, and then try and see if we can come up with, as a group, a consensus of which ones were our favorites. Feel free to comment or disagree with us, like us, or mention anything that we have forgotten and omitted. There are definitely some. So, Antoine, you want to start us off with one of our machines, one of our games that we chose?
Sure. Adam, which one is first on your list?
All right, so the first one, we're going to go, for presenting purposes, we're going to go in chronological order. And that's going to start us off with Street Fighter 2. So let me get the video for that. And there we go.
All right. So just as a little background, arcade games in France was not that big of a stuff. As you may know, all of these arcade games are published by Japanese company. In the case of Metal Slug, Street Fighter 2, I'm tired. Of course, Street Fighter is Capcom, and it was released, as you said, in 92? Something like this?
1991,
so 1992 for us, very likely. And of course, I had this, I believe, on Mega Drive at the time. So thankfully, most of the arcade game were ported onto a console version, which is how I can actually speak tonight. Otherwise, I would be lost. Because in the whole game, gonna talk, I think I played only one of these at an arcade. So Street Fighter 2, much better than the Street Fighter 1, which was a catastrophe and eat your coins like crazy. I really, really, really liked this game when I was a kid. Later, there was Tekken and stuff like this, but at the time, there was no competition. There was no Mortal Kombat, Tekken, da, da, da. That was Street Fighter 2. If you had any game, at least in France, it was this one. So, yeah, I played for hours and hours with friends. Way too much for my parents' taste, because, of course, I was a kid at school at the time. So we had to limit a bit the time. Yeah, no, that was a fantastic game. I really like the balance of this game, and I don't know which is your favorite one. I really like the latest Street Fighter, but on the two, I really like the Blanka, the man beast who can make electricity in a ball. It was really fun to play.
Blanka was always my favorite character too. That was the one I played the most, but it's funny I have to choose another one. Yeah, no, that's the funny. When I was little, he was the guy I really liked. But as I've gotten older, because he was a little bit slower, but he hit a little bit harder, kind of like Zangief. Oh, yeah. But as I've gotten older, I've leaned more towards kind of the fast, more athletic like comboing characters. So I probably would have, like, if it was me now, I'd probably go with more with Chun-Li. But the other character that I would play back then was Dhalsim, just because he was just so out. Like, I just like the characters that were just kind of like magic in a way. You know, either like I can make my body electricity, or I can stretch in some really bizarre way, or whatever. So I really liked Dhalsim. And me and my friends would spend, when we played it on console, we would just spend like hours trying to get Yoga Fire to work because the combo was something ridiculous. We're just, that's all we would do, is just back into other corners and be like, whoever can get it first wins. And that was kind of our competition there.
For me, it was, who's mine? E-Honda. I used to enjoy playing E-Honda. You could sit at range and, you know, especially against certain people, you could just slap them to death. Or probably if I were going, I was playing somebody who knew what they were doing, I probably would go for something like M. Bison. Just he had some decent power moves.
Like he was drive. The original boss. Was he the boss in Street Fighter 2 or just Street Fighter 1?
Yeah. In the 2, he was the boss, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think Sagat was the boss in Street Fighter 1, actually.
It's probably true. I haven't played a Street Fighter really since Street Fighter 2, actually. Every time I end up playing it, I always end up playing Street Fighter 2. I don't know why. That's just how it always seems to work out. But yeah, I'm seeing like the newer ones and the character designs. I'm kind of like, ooh, that's like really oddly bulky. And
and if you wonder what the difference between the arcade booths and the Mega Drive version, the Mega Drive version, you only pay once. For the arcade, you spend so many coins, you play the game like 2 or 3 times. Very good for Capcom, but very bad for the players.
Yeah,
I used to really, Vega was pretty powerful as well. I remember, was it Street Fighter 2 where you could knock the, he had the claw, you could knock the claw off and he could go in the cage?
Yeah,
that was the second one. Man, fun memories. Yeah, it was tough because I think of all of them, we weren't really into fighter games. I mean, we would play them, but it wasn't the type of thing that we would go crazy for. But I think Street Fighter probably was ranked higher than Tekken and Mortal Kombat, just because the characters were just, I don't know, they had more interest. And I guess as well with having the, I mean, it was a horrific movie, and I can't remember what year the movie came out, with Jean-Claude Van Damme and Kylie Minogue. But it did have, I can never remember his name, the guy from Adam's Family who played...
it was his final movie, Ghoulia or something, I think.
Yeah, what a character. I'm going to put this light back on because I've gone dark. Yeah, and then but you had the second one, Street Fighter 2 movie, was really good, the animated one. That was a really good, crazy film. Yeah, good anime movie. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I would play it sometimes. But I think it was more... And again, we're creeping into 2000 here. It was more when Marvel versus Capcom, I think 2001, when that came out. That was, I had friends who really enjoyed playing that. So I would see that more. And again, I didn't really play it. I would just sit at the back and watch everything go crazy. But Street Fighter 2, yeah. So many fun memories.
So have you guys played a Street Fighter game recently or no?
No, I had some friends who are very, very fan of Street Fighter. Was it the 5, the latest one? With Dan, he liked to play the Dan character, which is a cheap knockoff of Ryu. It's Ryu, but who misses everything. Like when you throw a fireball, you have a little stuff like this.
I always felt like this was a type of game that was really good at the time of the, you know, of games developing, and, you know, especially as an arcade game, because it's quick and simple and easy, and it's violent, and somebody wins, somebody loses. I always felt, how does it have longevity in the modern world? How do you make what is just a beat 'em up game something that people will continue to play?
Esports.
Is it big in esports? Is esports big?
Oh, no, Street Fighter is huge. In fact, most of the footage, I'm pretty sure this footage, maybe even possibly, oh no, not this footage, because this footage I took from the intro, but 90% of the footage that I was finding when I was looking for something to play was from Evo, was from an esports event. Mm-hmm. So most of the, but for some odd reason, the coloring in that one is really weird. Like everything's kind of has this purple tint to it. But yeah, no, Street Fighter, I think even Street Fighter 2 was one of the first games that kind of started the whole esport trend.
Absolutely,
But yeah, there's a really in that community, there's a video that's really famous from one of the old events where a guy, I don't remember who they were playing as. I don't remember if they were playing as Chun-Li. I think it was Chun-Li versus Ryu.
Chun-Li,
He blocks
everything.
Yeah, he gets him down to like one life. where one hit would kill them, and then they block every single attack and then just go into this combo that just takes out like 75% of the other guy's life and just completely like,
yeah, it's like this clutch victory.
Yeah, and if you watch the video, like immediately afterwards, the crowd just goes crazy. Like people are just screaming, you know. It's a really great video to watch. But yeah, this is a huge esports game. And we've talked about it before. That was part of the reason why the team at Dead or Alive said they were toning down the fan service, was because they wanted to join, you know, they wanted that sweet, sweet esport money. So they wanted it to become an esport, and they felt that it wouldn't, given its current reputation. And so that was the reason they toned it down, which they didn't technically tone it down, and it's still not an esport. So, but yeah.
You can just put more clothing on the esport version.
Yeah, fighters are huge in esports, yeah. And Street Fighter is still one of the biggest. So, and I think part of that is people feel that the characters in Street Fighter are some of the most balanced. Ready to move on to our next one?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so next we have, okay, this should be Metal Slug. So, sorry, I got the wrong order, but that's okay. Metal Slug was released in
1996.
Yes, 1996. So, Antoine, this was your personal choice, or you were the one that was kind of the champion of this game. Would you like to talk about it?
Yeah, champion's a big word, but so... Metal Slug is a run and gun, very famous video game. I think only Phil never heard about it. Created by Nazca Corporation, later merging with a more famous SNK in 1996. It's an extremely famous and very, very, very fun game where you can play, on the original game, only two guys, I think. And now they put a girl because... this has been declined in a lot of video games, and I think you have some Metal Slug right now on your mobile. I think my son have played this.
Wouldn't surprise me.
No, yeah, and it's still as fun as it was. Just for the little story, as I said, arcade in France wasn't big, but in my school, we were super lucky to have a break room for the older student, and between two flippers, you had this Metal Slug arcade, which is why this is the only arcade I ever played. It was free, so you have to wait your turn, but that was fantastic. Yeah, so you have, it's very basic, you know, you have your, you move to the right of the window. As you progress, you can get bigger weapons, you shoot everything coming at you, Metal Slug beings, you can get big tanks in this game, which allows you to move much faster or make much bigger booms. That was, it's a game was fun because the art was really good and there was explosions all the time. It was always over the top, really like an American movie, you know, like the old Hollywood muscle movie, like Predators, stuff like this. But as you can see on the screen, you can just burn alive your enemies.
Yeah, Korean says he was never lucky enough to play a Metal Slug game. But yeah, it was famous here. And I had actually never heard of Metal Slug until, I was kind of in Phil's camp. I had never heard of it until... I guess, yeah, until maybe the PS3 era or something like that, where they started, they released one on consoles, and then I'd heard of it. And then everyone was like, oh, yeah, you know, it's this really old game, and it's an arcade. And I was like, really? But yeah, I guess we just didn't have it around where I was. We lived kind of in the countryside, so we didn't have too many arcades near us. Yeah,
that's the only arcade we had, so that's why I knew it especially.
But yeah, no, once I heard of it, you know, then you could go back and see like, oh yeah, this was super popular. And they did the whole kind of the power-ups and everything where you could get different weapons, you know, so kind of like what's that game on the Sega, Gunstar Heroes. So they kind of did a similar idea where you can, you know, you can see right here the guys shooting, I don't know, what are those, torpedoes? And
yeah, exactly, you had rocket launcher,
yeah. flamethrower,
yeah, you had the shotgun, which makes a very big burst. So many stuff, and you could destroy so many vehicles as well. One of the big bosses, I think at the end, is a helicopter, which is super hard to kill.
Yeah,
and just like this boss, look at this one.
Yeah, it's just
big. Just looking at the trailer, it makes me want to actually download it on my phone right now. It's really
and,
cool.
Yeah, and then also with the, was it? I think it was just this past E3, one of the games on it was they're doing a Metal Slug's Tactics. So now there's going to be a...
Tactics?
Yeah, it's going to be like a Final Fantasy Tactics style, but with Metal Slug characters.
Weird. That's like a slow Sonic, fair enough.
I'm a huge fan of SRPGs, so when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, that looks cool. So
fair enough, but as you can see, the Metal Slug, usually you just don't have time to think. You go, you shoot, and you try not to die.
Yeah.
You leave your brain at the door, like, always in a panic.
Mm. So, Phil, you said you had never heard about this one.
It looks like Broforce, though. I've played Broforce before. I think that was free on the PlayStation Store.
Yeah, it was.
So, like, I'm guessing it's like the child that's born from this type of game.
Yeah, the Broforce definitely had a lot of elements. In fact, I think because in Broforce you had a bunch of different bros. I think one or two of the bros was very similar to some of the characters here. And then also there was another game that was on PS Plus that was free a while ago. I think it was like Mercenary Kings or something like that. Same idea. So yeah, this was one of those. So you could play definitely two player. Could you play up to four player, or were you limited to two?
No, at the time, at least on arcade, it was. But you know, the booth, there was only two pads, you know, on each side of the booth, and that was just the two guys. Mm. I think in the latest, I see they added a girl, but it's on mobile, so I don't know if you can really play multiplayer on mobile, at least on console, okay. Maybe.
Because some of these games, you definitely could play four player. In fact, Phil's pick that got unfortunately shut down due to a coin toss. He unfortunately got a little bit shafted. But you want to talk about that now, or you want to save that one for later?
Yeah, we can do. This is what I definitely. If you're watching this and you agree with me and you think Antoine's wrong, which he probably is, then definitely comment. If you agree with Antoine, you don't have to post. It's fine. And what I was looking at
I gotta find it now.
What I would view as the slightly bigger game, and there was three to choose from, these pride of place in most of the arcades you would go to. You had Simpsons, X-Men, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, the one that most people tend to remember is the Simpsons one. I really love the X-Men one just because of, you know, linked in with the cartoons of the time. Oh, what a time it was. Man, Gambit. Simpsons is the one that everybody always remembers. You could play four player. You could play any of the main cast, Marge, Homer, Bart, or Lisa, and every single one had their own like slightly different ability. Bart would have like his skateboard and go and hit things. Did Lisa have the tubers that she plays?
She had she had a jump rope. I think they'll
jump rope. Yes. You end up at the theme park.
Krusty Land,
yes. And I was trying to look. I always forget that you could even jump on the back. And it was just so simple. It was so simple and so easy. It was reminiscent. I'm not sure entirely. I'm guessing Streets of Rage must have come before. Streets of Rage must have been.
It's like Streets of Rage, yeah.
This was 1991. Yeah. I'm not sure if this was before or after Streets of Rage. I'll have to look that up.
Mm, interesting. And so obviously Streets of Rage only two, but I think in later versions of Streets of Rage, you could be the number of players in Streets of Rage increased as well. But this was the one that was the arcade. I mean, Streets of Rage, fair enough if you were on your Master System and you wanted to play some game time. But this was the one. And it was so different because when you went into the arcade games, the arcades, there were so many two-player games, lots of two-player games. But if you want to go four-player, you only really had usually, like, if your arcade had four driving machines of the same type that were linked up together. Then if you were looking for like a smaller place that maybe had one machine, then Simpsons was your go-to. Did you check, Adam?
So Simpsons came out in North America March 4th, 1991. Streets of Rage came out, I'm guessing in Japan, August 2nd, 1991. So Simpsons beats out Streets of Rage by just a factor of months.
Okay. But these games used to take everybody. My friends at Money would just pour in. And I remember, it wasn't this, it was X-Men. But like I said, they're all pretty much rinse and repeat similar games. I think X-Men had a little bit more development with the characters and you had more abilities. But I went to, is it Disney Quest? Disney Quest, I think, is the, you get the pass and you can go to all the different theme parks. But they have Disney Quest, which is the one that's just three floors of arcade machines from across the time. And you don't have to pay. You pay, obviously, to go in or if you've got your ticket. But all the machines are just pressed to play. And they have a wide variety of everything. And X-Men and Simpsons were the two that I was playing like crazy and everybody must have looked at me like I was weird. It was about 12 years ago at the time, but even then the game would be, you know, maybe 15 years old or so, 10, 15 years old. So everybody wants to play the new funky games, and I'm here playing this aged game. it was so exciting.
The gameplay holds up. I mean, Streets of Rage 4 just came out, what, a couple of years ago, last year, year before? So, I mean, there's still market for these kind of side-scrolling beat-em-ups.
Oh, yes, there's a lot. Like, recently, there was something, I think it's called Mother Russia, in the same style, which was very fun.
Mother Russia?
Something like this. A really, really fun game you can see on Steam.
Yeah. Well, one thing that The Simpsons definitely had, though, that I haven't really seen too many other games have, is this kind of combo system where you can see, like, Bart was jumping on top of Homer, or there him and Lisa kind of grabbed hands and started running around crazy. And when Homer's combined with Marge, they do this rolled thing. So, yeah, they kind of had different combo powers depending on who you selected. So the characters didn't play basically all the same. And not just the characters didn't play the same, but depending on who you were playing with, you didn't necessarily play the same. So, yeah. But yeah, looking at some of this animation, especially like when the eyes move and stuff, you can just tell that it's dated. But yeah, and they've had a couple successful games. They've had, I played Simpsons more on the Genesis, or as some people would call it, the Mega Drive. So I would play a lot of Bart's Nightmare was kind of my big one. And I think they had an arcade cabinet for that one as well, but that one came out later. And yeah, I really enjoyed, for me, I probably played the X-Men game more. I don't think we had a Simpsons arcade cabinet, but we definitely had X-Men, and we definitely had Turtles in Time. So I probably played those two more. And I probably played Turtles in Time more only because one of my friends actually had that on either Sega or Nintendo. So when we went to the arcades, we're kind of like, oh, okay, we already know how this works. So it was a little bit easier to do.
I think X-Men was my favorite just because there was more characters, I think. There was like 8 or 10 that you could choose from. You know, slightly different powers.
Yeah, the X-Men game on the consoles, I think, only had 4. I think they had Nightcrawler, Gambit, Wolverine, and Cyclops, I think, were the only ones. Or no, maybe you could play as Rogue or Jean Grey. I don't know.
I'm sure they had more. I'm sure I played Jubilee on one on an arcade machine as well.
Jubilee.
Yeah, really obscure ones, yeah. It might have been like a later version of it. It really just was. You just did like, sparkles.
Such a random power. All right, so we're going to continue on our quest to get through all these in time. We're making good time, though. So let me double check to make sure I got the right video this time. Here we go. Here is another one that Antoine recommended. And again, we can go into Phil's preference, because again, this was another game that Phil had not played. Sega Rally. I played this on the Saturn, I believe. It was on the Sega Saturn. I never played this in the arcade. But my friend had it on the Sega Saturn, and he had one of those little driving wheels, so we played it there. But Antoine, do you want to give us a little background on this one? Yeah,
so you guys might know, but maybe our younger listeners will not. Back in the 90s, WRC, so World Rally Championship, had this thing called Group B. And that was definitely the decade for the most stupid race there was ever. Like, imagine way overpowered cars on super small roads with all the crowd, no security barrier, anything, getting in the middle of the road and moving out of the way of the cars just at the end. It was absolutely insane. So back at this time in the 90s, rally was this big thing. And you called it the Genesis. For me, it's a Mega Drive. I had this Colin McRae rally, and there was this, all these rally games came out at this time. I guess it's not really popular now, but Sega Rally came out in this crazy time, so I think at this time they must have made a lot of money. It did not age well, definitely, but it was very, very fun. And I think for the little story, Phil chose Crazy Taxi, which I believe in the same kind of you drive a car, that's where the comparison end. But Crazy Taxi aged much better because it was way more fun. This one was way more like try to get the best score on the arcade. And that's it, with score which will disappear as soon as, you know, you remove the plug of the arcade. So,
yeah, this one was more of a, this is more like what Forza was before we have Forza and Gran Turismo.
I'd say right now you would compare it more like all the Formula One games that you have released every year.
Yeah, But yeah, I remember the controls were sometimes really kind of hard because this is before we really had a lot. I mean, there was kind of drifting, but there wasn't a lot. So controls would sometimes feel like you would turn way too sharp, or you just wouldn't turn sharply enough. And yeah, there was a little bit of drifting. You can see it there in the video, but it wasn't very well tuned, so it could get kind of crazy and spin out. So did you ever play a lot of racing style games, Phil, or...
Yeah, I think I might have played it. When I said I hadn't played it, I thought that Cruisin' USA had been the winning coin flip. So I was going off a misconception. Sega Rally I've heard of, and maybe I've played it. Again, racing games not massively huge for me, unless it's things like Burnout. Anything that's got crashes and explosions, I prefer that type. I found these games, especially early on, were just too infuriating in that some of the driver controls would just be so delicate or just crazy, you know, and it would just annoy me. People are like, no, you've got to be, you know, using your clutch at this time, or you've got to be changing gears at this time. I was like, what? Because I didn't drive until late on, so driving doesn't really interest me massively. So I was like, yeah, whatever. Put my foot down. It's not going. You're beating me. Whatever.
So I have a really important question for you guys. When you play these games, do you do manual or automatic?
Manual, of course.
I would drive manual, yeah, because that's how I did learn to drive.
Even on a regular car, I would prefer manual. My first two cars were both manuals. And then we came to Taiwan and almost no cars here are manual.
What a fake American you are.
Why?
I've been living in Canada since 2015 and it's extremely rare to see manual cars.
In America?
Everything's automatic, at least in Canada, but it's a North American market. Everything's automatic here.
Oh no, we would get the smaller cars, like the Toyota Camrys, and you could choose. They had automatic versions or manual versions, and Americans love manual cars. I mean, we would get the muscle car culture, yeah. You know, so you get like, a manual car is a man's car, you know? So my dad was like, you're learning how to drive a manual, and he made sure that all of us knew how to drive manual transmission. And then I came to Taiwan. And it was interesting because here in Taiwan, they actually have two different licenses. You can get an automatic license or a manual license. And with the automatic license, you can only drive automatic vehicles. But with the manual license, you can drive automatics or manuals. So when I came here and I was getting my license, I applied for the manual license. And everyone kind of gave me a weird look like, are you going to be driving trucks? You know, why would you want a manual license? Are you becoming a bus driver or something? You know, so like people kind of gave me weird looks, but yeah, now I have it and I'm very proud of myself for that. So yeah, I was just kind of surprised that they actually had two separate licenses, one for manual drivers because they didn't want automatic people driving manual cars if they don't know what they're doing. All right, but since we mentioned Crazy Taxi, how about Phil give us a little breakdown on how that game goes?
Yeah, this for me, again, is another one of those wherever you go, when it was there with the bright yellow display things, sit down with the driving wheel and everything. And I think it was iconic for the time as well, just because Offspring doing the whole soundtrack to it, like na 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 na.
Looking through the videos, it was like, whoa, I totally forgot about these songs.
That was probably one of the best parts about it. You didn't mind paying the money for the gaming experience, but it was also that you got, you know, like an Offspring tune for free whilst you were playing at the same time, so you could properly rock out and then just play again. And it was crazy. There was madness, everything. You know, you get those short fares, do you get the long fares? Can you get all the way over there? You know, who are you going to kill? Who are you going to crash? Where are you going to bang against everything? It was just, for an arcade game, I said driving doesn't really interest me, but if it's driving with something fun and a bit quirky and a bit crazy like Burnout, then Crazy Taxi definitely had that silliness about it. And you had you're talking about the drift. Oh my God, trying to get some drift bonuses on Crazy Taxi going around corners, you know, and seeing the numbers go ding, 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 ding with all your extra tip money. Yeah, man, that's what it's about. You guys Crazy Taxi fans?
I enjoyed it, yeah, back in the day. Yeah, I like the fact that the scoring system was based entirely on how much money you were making. So you could, basically how fast you get there, and I think you get money deducted if you like kill people or something like that, right? So it's kind of a toss up between, well, if I kill this guy, I can get here faster, or, you know, like, so you kind of like putting a price on human life was kind of an interesting dynamic there. But yeah, I thought I liked the fact that it wasn't entirely based on time, that there were other factors, and you could even choosing your fares was actually even part of it. You know, do you want to go for the bigger fare, but it's going to be more difficult and you might fail? Or do you want to go with the shorter one? This is kind of a safer bet, but you're going to be making a lot less money. So I think there was a, what was the game over status though? It was just, you took too long, right?
Yeah, you had, your time was always counting down. And when you completed a fare, then you got extra time. And if it was a longer fare, you got longer bonus time.
Right. Yeah, I think they made an update of this too, not too recently, but a while ago. I'm not sure if it's on current gen or maybe it was on like the previous two gens, like the PS3 and the Xbox 360. I don't remember. But yeah, there is an update somewhere.
I have both Crazy Taxis on my phone.
There you go. Na, 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 na. Does it still play the music?
yeah.
And you control it just by rotating it like a steering wheel?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Was it free or do you have to pay for that?
I think it was like cheap. It was like a few dollars. It wasn't anything expensive.
Yeah, they probably didn't have to do too much maintenance on it. I mean, the game's been out for forever. They're like, eh, just put it out there and make money and sit back and collect. All right, then we're going to move into our next game, Time Crisis. All right, who wants to talk about this one?
I'll let you go first this time.
Me? Yep, sure. Phil? Oh, Phil, okay. I was surprised there. Phil?
No, you're
up. Oh, it is me. Okay, all right, yeah. Fine. Yeah, so Time Crisis was one of the original light gun shooters. And it was kind of interesting in that previous light gun shooters, I think Terminator 2 was older. There were other ones. Obviously, everyone knows Duck Hunt from the Nintendo. But, you know, you shoot. When you reload, you have to shoot off screen. Area 51 was another big game at the time. But Time Crisis had this dynamic where there was a pedal on the ground. And if you press the pedal, then you duck and cover. And so there was this kind of idea that, you know, you want to duck and cover. And then when the enemies, because you could tell that when they need to reload. And when they need to reload, that's when you pop up and shoot them. And so it kind of added a little bit of strategy to it beyond the previous game. So it was just, you know, shoot the guy as quickly as possible. And it had its own little story. It wasn't anything to write home about. It was just, you know, the generic cheesy, I'm a cop and I'm saving the daughter of a president of some country or something. She's right there in the video. You can obviously see how well animated the characters are. I don't even think this guy's mouth moves when he talks. Yeah. So, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And it actually was pretty accurate because I remember sometimes those games you're shooting and it's just not where you want it to be. This one was pretty good about that. So what was your guys' experiences with it?
I really like this kind of games. And this is typically the kind of games which really doesn't handle being porting to another, to a console well. This one, for instance, was on PlayStation 1. So imagine you are at the booth, you have your gun, maybe with a friend, and you shoot and you pedal and you duck. And imagine exactly the same with a pad. Doesn't work well. You know, like you have your little stuff moving to the screen. Poof. It's really really hard to do on console, but as an arcade booth, I think it's a classic. You can't put, you have to put at least one rail shooter on it, and this one for me was the classic you have to put on. With, as you, I think was House of the Dead the one you chose.
House of the Dead was the other choice that we had. That was another popular one at the time.
Yeah, so one of the two, but that was really really cool. I really like the same kind of at the cinema next to me, they have this kind of thing with a Jurassic Park. It's pretty cool as well. This, you know, go well through the ages as well. This type of gameplay, it's really well for arcade, not console. But at the arcade, you know, before, after cinema, really nice.
And I think some of the, I don't think it was in the first one, but I think some of the other ones added different weapon varieties as well. So you could get like shotguns and automatics and stuff like that, which would have limited ammo. Yeah, so you'd collect that gun and you could have maybe five shots with it or whatever. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. The PlayStation version, yeah, was really strange because you could play it with my friend had not this one, but he had a different game, but you could play it with your controller, But then, yeah, you're just moving a reticule, a little thing across the screen, or it, you could buy a light gun and then it would work with the light gun. But
accurately?
Fair. It depended on the size of your screen. Okay. Because it was built for, I don't remember things were, but if you had, the bigger your screen was, the more accurate it seemed to be. And the smaller your screen was, the less accurate it would be. So if you had a relatively big screen TV, you could do pretty well with it. But it was a lot of fun, and I don't remember how they did the hiding mechanic. I don't remember if it was point the gun down or if there was a special button. I don't really remember. What about you, Phil? Did you enjoy these light gun shooters, or not really your thing?
I think I was trying to think of Time Crisis. I might have seen it out and about. House of the Dead I've played, and I knew House of the Dead because, as I mean, how old? Going through the late 90s sort of thing, so I was sort of like just getting to my teenage years sort of thing, into the mid. So something like a horror game, shooting horror game, which stands out a lot more, and you kind of pay attention to it more. Whereas maybe I'd probably seen Time Crisis. I probably just don't really remember it that much as something that would stick out. So again, like Antoine said, you in an arcade, if you walk into an arcade, you're pretty much looking for a driving game, a beam up game, a shooty game, and a side scrolling game sort of thing. And then maybe some classics, you know, from 80s or things is kind of what you'd expect in most arcades. So definitely deserves its place. And I vow to your guys' wisdom and fountain of knowledge on this being, you know, one of, I presume then this would be one of the earliest.
Yeah, this is probably one of the earliest. I think the earliest might have been the old Terminator one, but that was literally just like a screen and there were sprites walking around. It wasn't 3D at all. Growing up, we had Time Crisis, but I think in our area, Area 51 was the more popular game. Did you guys ever play that one? Okay, I don't have a video for that one, but obviously if you know the stories of Area 51 in the U.S. where the Roswell UFO crashed, basically you play as some kind of soldier and aliens have broken free and they're running through the facility. So you just go down there and shoot a bunch of aliens. And, you know, and since they're aliens and not humans, they could get away with a lot of things that they couldn't in a regular game. Like, you know, you hit them and they can explode and, you know, gore, you know, comes out and they, you know, explode in a shower of guts and blood, but the blood's, you know, purple or green or something. So it's not an issue. So
I do remember the Terminator 2 game. Yeah. I remember the machine. I'm looking at it. 1991 for the Terminator 2.
Okay. And this, let's see, Time Crisis was, I got it up here.
95, I think.
Yeah, 95. So yeah, the Terminator 2 game predated this one. But yeah, but that one was really just more like what you would have in a carnival where you had like the ducks moving past and you're just, you know, shooting the ducks as they
pass. The machine guns like stuck onto the thingy, weren't they? You could only like...
Yeah, they were mounted.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, then we're going to move on to our last of the original ideas that we had. And that is Dance Dance Revolution, which I don't think any arcade, you know, could go without. Once people created this thing, yeah, it just, there was no going back. This was the arcade game of its time. And there are a lot of great videos out there of people doing some crazy stuff. This is, as you can see, it just got really insane in the video here. This is the Konami International Games Competition. This is basically the world elite of DDR playing DDR at their highest level. And you can see that these guys are getting crazy combos at a speed that's just inhuman. So, and you can see the music is speeding up and slowing down as well. So, you know, these are the kind of things where you just basically have to memorize. You guys play a lot of DDR?
Well, yeah, my sister loved it. I think we've discussed it before. I think my sister ended up having like four dance mats or something. So anytime we went to an arcade, again, it's one of those things that just stands out. It's so huge and there's always some people looking like fools and there's always a big audience and crowd around it. It's one of those that just draws people in. I feel a bit sorry because this one only just crept into our 90s. Cause I think it was like 99, is it?
99.
Yeah, so compared to some of those other arcades, it's got like 8 years on it, which we know is like a long time for this period of gaming. But yeah, we had to go with a rhythm game. And I'm trying to think of any type of rhythm games that predated this.
I think there was one that had
guitar,
like...
Guitar game, right?
No,
the guitar game, Guitar Hero came later, but I think there was one where it was kind of like a Simon game where you had, like, I think four colored balls or something, and you had to kind of like a whack-a-mole where you had to slap them in the right order. I think we had something like that, but I don't remember what it was called. But yeah, once these dance games came out, there was no turning back. I mean, DDR obviously was pretty much the first, but then now you have Let's Dance, which has kind of taken over. And now it's gotten, you know, it used to just be your feet had to hit these four things and that was it. And now it's your hands got to match it. And it's like a whole, you know, body movement. And yeah, it's just crazy. And you can go online and look at videos of people playing and people get into it.
And spawn all the other games that came from it. Like you said, the Guitar Hero, your bongo game. What's it called?
Yeah, there was like a Donkey Kong bongo, wasn't there? There was a Donkey Kong game with bongos.
I've seen other ones as well, to random instrument type things where you just got to whack or play whatever it is to the beat.
Yeah, the one that I wanted to include was the, Taiko no, I always just call it Taiko, but it's, yeah, Taiko no Tsujijin, I'm not sure. But the one where it's got the big drum and you get the two sticks and you have to either hit in the middle or hit on the side. And even now, my wife and I, if we go to the movies and we have like 15 minutes before the movie starts, and in Taiwan, arcades are still popular. So they'll always have one of those machines and we will always play it every single time. And she's really good. So I definitely lose from time to time. And I've definitely developed blisters playing that game.
Yeah, I was going to say, it damages my hands sometimes. You play too many in a row. You've got to stop, you know, after 10 minutes. Like, okay,
yeah,
let's step away from this machine.
Yeah, and then because people play it so much, the sticks sometimes start getting kind of splintery, and those machines get a lot of love.
Nowadays, you see it as well. You can tell how iconic it is that in so many movies, if they're at some arcade or bowling alley or they're at something, dance, DDR or some version of it is still in the mall, you know, they're still dancing like crazy to some random songs in the film.
Yeah. Yeah, we were, my wife and I were watching, I don't remember which movie it was, on Netflix. She had watched one of those kind of teen, young adult kind of romance movies. I think it was like The Kissing Booth or something like that. But the characters in it, I mean, this movie was made last year, and the characters in it, one of their favorite things to do was go to the arcade and play DDR. Like, they're still playing DDR in 2019 or something like that. Or 2018 or whatever. Yeah, it's definitely still very popular. And as you can see, this is a world competition, and Konami's been doing this for years. So still continues on to this day. And apparently now they even have certain songs where one person is supposed to do both pads simultaneously. So they have these like super crazy games where you're not just, you know, clicking the four things, but you're actually kind of moving your feet around the pad as you go. And it's madness. All right, so we've gone through our main things. We still have, I think, what have we not covered? Oh, actually, I think we've covered everything except for, because we went over Crazy Taxi, because Phil had not played some of these games, and he really wanted to play these, he really wanted to talk about certain games, so we brought them up. But are there any other arcade games that you guys want to bring up before we move on?
No, but I just wanted to mention the fact that when you see the games we talked about today, which are very old, because arcade games is from the 80s, but then you might think that it's a dead business, forget it. I saw a show not too long ago. So remember who we talked about? Sega, Bandai Namco, Konami, who else? SNK. All of these, maybe you see them sometime publishing video games of famous series, and they are very happy doing just this, not trying to fight PlayStation or, you know, Sony or Microsoft, simply because this arcade game, I just saw the stuff in Japan, but at least in Japan, it's insane amount of money they make every year. They really don't need to do anything else. Just selling this arcade, maintaining them, because they need a lot of love, of course. That's a very, very, very big business for them. So they just make extra money, you know, when you see something released by Sega or Bandai Namco. That's just a little part of their business. Everything is arcade. So it's still a very big thing, or at least in Japan. But I expect
here too in Taiwan.
Yeah, in Taiwan as well. Yeah. I think it's in Asia, it's a big thing, but still, like here, at least in North America, you don't have much arcade place, but you always have a few arcade in the cinema.
Yeah.
So it's not dead. It's still there.
For those of you who are interested, especially if you're over in the States, when I was looking up a lot of these things, there is a company called Arcade One Up. And they do vintage replica machines or three-quarter sized machines for between $600 to $800. And I was like, oh man, should I buy some and get them sent? They have like Simpsons, X-Men, Street Fighter 2, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Pac-Man, Mortal Kombat, Dragon Slayer, Golden Axe, Star Wars, loads of other ones. And I was just like, I just can't get it past the misses of like five, you know, arcade machines arriving at the front door. Just
at $800 each. Why? It's only $4,000.
Yeah, I wish. And then I just have a row of them behind me.
Yeah, my wife was talking about at one point getting one of those Taiko machines and putting it up on our roof.
if you look into the pop culture, I think it was in Friends that at some episode they buy a Pac-Man machine. And they can never get out of it, you know, at the end. I think Chandler has his hands like, I can't move it back. I played too much.
Definitely happened. Yeah, you hear about stories about people dying in internet cafes, but never in an arcade. Why is that? I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's more exercise going on since you're standing
up. You stand up, so it's healthier.
It's healthier. That's right. Arcades are healthier. So for any of you out there thinking of going to an internet cafe, don't. Go to an arcade. It's better for your health. That's why people in the 80s were so much thinner.
Especially on DDR.
Especially on DDR, yeah. So before we go into some news, I'm just going to give a quick mention to an extra pick that I had. I don't know if you guys have heard of this or not, but a game called Prop Cycle. And this was a game that had a bike on it. And you can see kind of what this guy is sitting on here. But it was a bicycle, like an exercise bike, and you would sit on it and you would pedal it. And then in the game, depending on how hard you were pedaling, it would basically, you know, move a rotor in the game and the back of your bike. And so it was literally an exercise bike that had a video game attached to it. And you powered your character by pedaling fast. So that was a great exercise. It was a lot of fun. Me and my cousins, we would go to a kind of a little, I don't remember what you would call it, but it was kind of like a little camping place every year. And they would, they had one of these games there. And it was Bubble Battle? Boggle Boggle? The one with the two little dinosaurs and they shoot the balls.
Bubble Bubble.
Yeah.
So Bubble and Bubble.
This and that game were the two games that we would play consistently were the two games. And this one definitely was, you would definitely get a bit of a workout on this one. Because, yeah, depending on, I think you could choose different gear sets, basically, to, you know, so you could, like on a regular bike, and that would determine your power, so you could actually make the bike stronger and stuff like that. So that was that. But we do have a little bit of news that we can go
over. Oh, we're going to rank these?
No, okay. Do we want to rank them? We can rank them real quick.
Oh, do you want to go by theme rather than machine? And then it opens up. We don't have to isolate one game.
If sure. You go by what was your favorite?
Rhythm, fight game, running gun, racing game, car racing game, or on rails light shooter.
Sure. All right. So what would your rank be, Phil, since... You're probably the most prepared.
Kind of. If I was going to go to an arcade, the first thing I'd be looking for would be like my Simpsons X-Men. So we're going to bunch that with Metal Slug kind of as a run and gun kind of thing, side scroller, I guess. So that would probably be my number one because those are the games I really like. Then I would probably be looking at my rhythm games. So I'll go with DDR or Guitar Hero, but that's a bit after this. Then for me, probably would be... decisions. Probably an on-rails light gun shooter, but again, I was a little bit beyond some of these, so I was more like time splitters and things like that, which were on the machines. Then racing games and then fighter games probably would be my order, personally.
All right, Antoine? If you were in an arcade, what would you go to first?
I agree on the first one. Metal Slug would be the first one. So side scroller first, then a shooting game like Time Crisis, Third, I'd put the fighting game, then racing, and at the very, very, very last, rhythm game. I'm absolutely horrendous at rhythm game, or just at rhythm in general. So please don't put me in one of these machines. I will die, literally.
All right, I'm going to have to go the opposite as Antoine. I played in the band all the way from through middle school, all the way through the end of university. So I was a little more musically inclined. And my wife is did the same thing with dance. So for us, definitely rhythm game would be the first thing either one of us would just beeline to. So something like DDR or the Taiko games. So for me, the rhythm games would be number one. After that, I'd probably go with the racing games. And then probably the kind of side scroller type games, and then the shooters, and then the fighters would probably go my order. Yeah, I'm not. I like some fighting games, but I didn't like the idea that I could pay money and then I'd be out in 20 seconds. You know, so yeah, I wasn't a real big fan of those. I liked playing them on console though. So I like the original Mortal Kombat on the Sega. You know, absolutely loved it. Mortal Kombat at the arcades. Wouldn't touch it. So,
you know, I had some friends who would always go for pinball machines for that, because he said, oh, if you get good at a pinball machine, you can make that, you know, dollar less yourself for about half an hour.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And on the topic of pinball, not exactly the same thing, but Antoine was saying before about how arcades are thriving in Japan. The reason that we haven't gotten a new Silent Hill since, I don't know, the last one was on like the PlayStation 3 or something like that. I think it was like Downpour. We haven't gotten a new Silent Hill in a super long time. However, Konami has been making Silent Hill things. It's just every Silent Hill thing has been a pachinko machine. So Silent Hill has been relegated to pachinko for the last, I don't know, 5-8 years or something like that. So that is why we're not getting new Silent Hills. And yeah, right after they canceled Silent Hills, the one with Guillermo del Toro, immediately they announced that they were releasing a new Silent Hill pachinko machine. So, yeah. But yeah, so we got a few quick minutes left. These news are really short. The first one is going to take just a few seconds. Unfortunately, it has been announced that PlayStation 5 and the Xbox X series will probably not become readily available until 2023 at the earliest. They are expecting shortages to last much longer. So that is the current predicted time when those are going to be readily available in stores. So yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, I know. So they are there. I mean, you can get them. I got one, Phil got one. So you can definitely find them if you keep trying, but they're probably not going to be super easy to find. You're going to have to kind of keep your eye on things all the way up until 2023.
Robbie was saying he went to the Sony store here to get one and said they had them, but they were 32,000 NT dollars and the RRP for them is about 14,000.
Why were they selling them so high at the...
So they were like a 3x markup from the Sony shop.
At the actual store, though, they marked it up?
That's what you're saying, yeah.
That seems odd. I mean, were they offering like you have to get like a package deal with a bunch of different stuff?
Just have to spend like 18,000. I'm not sure. He just said like he went in and said it would have them, but it would be 32,000.
Hmm. Yeah, because I don't think the company themselves would mark it up. That seems really.
So what's that equate? That equates to like 800 pounds. Oh, I don't know what that is in dollars. What's that in dollars?
32,000 would be about. It's about 1,000 US.
Just over 1,000 US dollars. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a little slightly less. I checked up the exchange rate yesterday and it was 36. So should be just under $1,000 US. But yeah, that's pretty crazy. So that's some quick news. Unfortunate good news. And this
unfortunate
one's,
good news.
Unfortunate good news. Yeah, I don't know what I'm saying here. And this one is the other piece of news. This has been really big. Horizon Forbidden West. Yeah, well, because I wrote Forgiven Quest here. So Forgiveness Quest has been going through a bit of trouble because when it was announced, they announced that the PlayStation 4 version would be released for $60 and the PlayStation 5 version would be released for $70. And there was no way, there was no path to upgrade. And originally they had said that the PS4 to the PS5 version was going to be free. to upgrade. If you bought the PS4 version, you would be a free upgrade to get the PS5 version. Well, that didn't happen. And the reason that they said that was because what they apparently had said was all launch games were, you know, so games that were launching within the within PlayStation's first year would be getting a free upgrade from PS4 to PS5. The Horizon Forbidden West was originally planned to be released within that first year. However, it has been delayed. And since it was delayed, it was no longer considered a launch game and therefore was not eligible for the free upgrade. And that was their reasoning for why they were not going to be offering this free upgrade. So what happened was people made a huge fuss over it. And Sony went back and they said, okay, you know what? We did specifically say Horizon Forbidden West was going to be getting a free upgrade. So we're going to go back. We're going to offer the free upgrade on Horizon Forbidden West. However, moving forward, every game that is released or every first party game that is released on PS4 will be released at a different price than the PS5. There will not be free upgrades anymore. But there will be a $10 upgrade fee, basically. So if you want to upgrade from PS4 to PS5, you pay the $10 difference and you can get the PS5 version. Antoine, comment?
Yeah, they came back on it. Say you can have a free upgrade from PS4 to a PS5 if you bought the deluxe version. If you have the base version like I did take, you're screwed. No.
They went back again?
Yeah, that's what I saw yesterday, so it's fresh news. Hopefully that's the latest. But the base game of PS4 cannot be upgraded in PS5 for free.
That was the original. Because the original news said that if you had the deluxe edition, you could upgrade. Or you didn't upgrade, you actually got both versions.
Exactly, yes. So that's why I'm waiting to see more definitive news. But what I saw on it yesterday, I saw an article saying, no, actually, Guerrilla Games came back on their original news. So I want to actually check that up.
Yeah, like I don't know. I know a lot of sites have been getting where news is like, yeah, they have like 2-day-old news or 3-day-old news.
I don't mind anyway, because I'm not planning to get a PS5 anytime soon.
Let's see. Okay, so this was yesterday on the Washington Post. And it says, as of yesterday, Washington Post was still saying that you could get it for free.
With the PS4.
If you buy the PS4 version. Yeah, so if you buy the PS4 version of Horizon Forbidden West, you get the PS5 version. You can upgrade to the PS5 version for free. Okay. However, all future games, there's going to be a $10 upgrade fee, similar to what happened with Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut, mm-hmm. where you would pay the additional $10 and then you can upgrade it to the PS5. But what's kind of getting me is I ordered the deluxe edition because I love this series and, you know, I wanted to support them and I like getting a lot of extra stuff. So, you know, so I was more than happy to pay for that. But when they released it, they released the PS, when they released or when they first came out, there were the two prices. Some people, you know, pre-ordered it on PS5. Then they say, well, you can pre-order it on the PS4 and get a free upgrade to the PS5. So what's the incentive to pay for the PS5 version? That's $10 more if you can just buy the PS4 version and then get two versions of it and get it $10 cheaper. So I've been waiting to see. I've tweeted to Guerrilla Games. I've responded to I've sent queries to the PlayStation blog and nothing back so far. Yeah, and if you go to the store, the PS5 version is still $10 more than the PS4 version. So I don't know what's going to happen there. I don't know if they're going to cancel all pre-orders, put it back up, and then allow people to pre-order again. If they're going to, you know, reimburse those PS5 people and put $10 back into their wallet, or if they're just going to say, sorry, that's your mistake, not our problem. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. I'm thinking they're just going to, say,
meh.
Yeah. Sorry. That's how it works out. That's kind of my thinking too as well. But poor Phil looks a bit upset because he knows that once this game comes out, it's going to become the new Ghost of sashimi at his home, and he's never going to see his PS5 again. So.
I'm not sure. I don't think she played Horizon Zero Dawn, so it might be okay.
Wow. She definitely should.
Absolutely.
All right. And with that, that is the end of today's episode. Thank you for listening to our opinions on arcades. If you have a different opinion or there was a game in your area that you played and we apparently didn't because arcades are different everywhere, then feel free to drop us a line and let us know exactly which games we left off. And other than that, make sure you like and subscribe. And Phil and Antoine, any closing comments before we go?
No, just have a good evening.
All right.
See you next week.
All right. See you guys next week. Bye-bye.